This is Living the Bream with Fox News Chief Legal Correspondent Shannon Bream.
All right, folks, Living the Bream this week. I have someone I've long wanted to have on the show, a good friend, somebody you know and love as well. Jasper Perino's mom, Dana, is here with us today. Welcome to Living the Bream.
Thank you so much. I actually was recognized 3 times last week. I wasn't recognized first. Jasper was recognized, and people wanted the picture with him, not with me. So I feel like I've really made it.
When your dog has so many followers, but listen, you post the best stuff on Instagram. Because
did you see
him running around and digging on the beach and doing somersaults? Basically, he's hilarious.
Did you see the mini documentary I made on Instagram?
No, a mini doc.
Yeah, kind of in the David Attenborough style.
I think it's
a minute long, and I was doing this because Jasper is a bird dog, but he actually prefers to hunt for fish.
Yes,
so
he does.
I was doing a miniature documentary, and then people called it a dogumentary.
See, that's just too cute.
It was super cute.
Listen, he has got a lot of energy, that Jasper. How old is he now?
He's 5.
Is he 5?
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe that. Okay, so when we had our lab, she was so crazy and full of energy when she was young. People were like, oh, just wait till she's 2. Just wait till she's 3. Just wait. Finally, at 5, she started acting normal.
Yeah.
But Jasper's still got a lot of energy.
He's got a lot of energy, though I can see some maturity.
Oh.
Yes.
Is he reading books now?
No, you can see it in his face. Vishlas go gray pretty early.
Mm.
So, under his chin is all gray, and now he's got flecks of gray under his eyes and even on his ears. And I was upset about it, and I'd said something on Twitter or something about it. And my friend, Five Fan Photoshops, he made a fake photograph, but it was just for dogs.
I was going to say, do they have that?
Well, they don't, but he made it for me in burnt orange.
Oh, Vishla colored.
And, you know, like a lot of men use burnt orange too, apparently.
Yes, they do.
Have you seen that? That's not
a
good look.
I'm not going to say any names because I think
neither.
People can figure out for themselves. But let me just say that not all lighting is the same.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes the way we see ourselves in the bathroom versus natural sunlight versus TV lights, we've all had an experience where maybe some coloring didn't look just
and
right.
And also, I think that guys need to know that women like salt and pepper hair or even salt hair.
In the case of
my husband.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, I do love that. By the way, have you seen Steve Carell? You know, the funny comedian guy.
Has he got gray hair now?
He has gone gray and he looks awesome.
Good.
Yes.
Wow. So my grandfather, Grandfather Perino on the ranch, he had beautiful silver hair.
Mm-hmm.
And he used Brill Cream.
Ooh, that kind of makes it shiny.
Yeah.
But it doesn't color it.
No color.
He's just Silver Fox time.
Yep.
I love that.
He only used that when he was going to town.
Well, what happened when you went to town? Like, put on your clean Wranglers?
Clean Wranglers, press shirt. You know that they used to... Have you ever seen those frames that they put in Wranglers when they dry outside so that they're nice and straight?
No.
And it's basically...
It's like a human form? Like legs?
It's like it's just like a square frame. Put it down there. So that's like... It's like... They air dry, but it looks like they're pressed.
Okay.
And you can put them the other way if you want a crease. But my grandfather didn't do that.
No, that's too fancy.
No. I always remember this. So my grandparents did not have a shower in the ranch house.
Oh, what?
There was a bath.
So
my grandfather would get up before dawn, and he would do all of his chores. And then usually if he went to town, it was because he had a meeting. He was on the fair board, the county fair board, and he was also a county commissioner.
I like that.
So he had a lot of... civic involvement. And so I always remember, even as a little kid, I can remember this. My grandmother would go and draw my grandfather a bath and lay out his clothes, the pressed Wranglers and the pressed dress shirt. And he'd have his Brill Cream and a little comb, you know, that
I
he could take
it.
So that he could make sure he looked good. And the fancy hat.
Oh.
Well, the town hat.
Oh, okay. The in-town hat versus the really working on the ranch hat.
Right. They were a lovely couple. Boy, they loved each other. Oh, my gosh. This was a couple to emulate.
Listen, reading about your family in your first book, I don't know, was that your first book? It was the first book of yours that I read about, Good News, is just such an amazing background that you have, such great roots. And I don't know if people who haven't read the book, they really should check it out because it's personal and it's professional. Like, it's such a good mix of stories. But I love knowing where people came from, like who they are, what their family was like.
Right, and it's really interesting. So, you know, I've been involved in helping other people do their books.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 of the people that I can think of off the top of my head, Karl Rove, George W. Bush to some extent, extent, was reluctant to talk about his early years and upbringing and Charles Krauthammer, partly because they think, oh, no one's going to care. No one's going to want to read
so
that.
They so care.
They so care. And also, so Karl Rove turns in his book to his publisher, and they say, you can't just show up at 45 as the president's winning two presidential campaigns. People want to know, how did you get here? So the first 100 pages of Courage and Consequence is wonderful, and it helps you really understand how people got to that point. George W. Bush's early years are obviously amazing, and he starts off talking about the decision that he made to stop drinking at the age of 40, and then looking back and how the unconditional love of his parents was what gave him the confidence to be able to take risks like he did in business and then in politics. And then Charles Krauthammer, obviously, you know, there's the personal story for him that a lot of people had no idea about. And it is so moving when you read about his upbringing. I always remember the story, and you can remember them precisely, the stories about how like, for me, it might be that people might remember that I used to, well, actually, in my book, I write about how my grandfather was driving my sister and I around on the ranch, and we came across a horse that had fallen through a cattle guard and had broken its leg. And my grandfather made us get down on the floor. I think I was only 6 or 7, and my sister was younger than that, so probably 3. And he said, don't look up. And of course, I kind of snuck a look because he had to shoot the horse. And I saw this tear go running down his face. And it was just this that moment of like toughness, like a rancher, and like his soft-heartedness when it came to the animals and the ones especially that were in his care and the dominion that humans have over animals. So you really do learn a lot about people from that. And why did I start talking about that?
But I want to ask you if you think that you were ingrained with the love of animals as much as you love Jasper. Henry that you had before.
I think it started very early. You know, when I was just a baby, my grandfather bought me, I was the first grandchild on that side. So he bought me a pony and her name was Sally.
Oh, I used to have one named Dixie.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, it was the South. What are you going to do?
Exactly.
The horse was named Dixie.
I don't know why it was Sally. And then he also bought me a puppy, and that was Jocko, that my mom really took care of. But so we grew up with animals early on. And I think that what I remember that my grandparents didn't take a lot of vacations. Hardly ever.
They couldn't. They were working a ranch.
Yeah, you can't leave. You have all of these beating hearts depend on you. And I sort of see that, too, when it comes to this is going to sound a little deep, but I do think that America has a role to play in the world, because I know people don't want to necessarily be the world's police. The USA shouldn't be the world's policeman, but you know, if we're not, who's going to be? And I think that the care that we can provide to others is so important. And in fact, tonight, as my one more thing, I'm going to be talking about a crisis that is coming upon us that we can see coming, and we have got to do something more. And it's this famine that could be the worst humanitarian disaster since 1945. And we know it's coming, and there are millions of innocent people, children, who will die of starvation. President Trump,
doesn't have to happen.
No, because we know that this is coming. And so Jackson Deal of the Washington Post writes about this morning, and I've been trying to sort of ring the bell here, because you know it's hard in news, you want to talk about what's happening right now, but this is a slow burning crisis. Like, we can see it coming, and one of the problems is that whereas President Trump has been generous and we are meeting our obligations, other countries are not. But he is in a position to try to really pressure them. And one of the countries is Saudi Arabia, and especially in Yemen. The war there that they have waged closed the port down about 70%. And so, partial closure, and like 70% of their food comes from there. So America, that doesn't mean we have to deliver the food, or we don't have to tell other countries necessarily what to do, but we can lean on somebody to do the right thing. And that's where I do think that I learned that as a kid, that if you can do something to help an innocent person not suffer, or a being not suffer, then you should do that.
Yeah, and sometimes it feels overwhelming because you do see all of the need around you, just in your immediate circle, but more broadly across the country, across the world. And sometimes it can be overwhelming. But the fact is that, you know, people who've made a real difference in history, we may not know everyone's name, but if you can reach out to the things that you want to shine a light on and help.
Well, like at Mercy Ships, which is the charity my husband and I support, we went to Benin just a couple of months ago, and we talked to one of the doctors who he does cataract surgeries. And in Africa, especially in Western Africa, there's a lot of congenital cataracts. So that means that it's hereditary, and sometimes you're born with them, or as a young child, you get them. And then some are very much operable and they can restore sight right away. But this one guy in over a few months had done over 825 of these surgeries.
Wow.
But on one day, when the day we happened to visit, he was just a broken down person because he had to turn five kids away.
Ugh.
And to know that you can't help. And that also, that was a fraction of the people that had that needed help just in that tiny port city of Benin. So if you think about the need around the world, like there's a lot more we all could be doing.
What do you think drove you into service? Because really, you know, working in the White House, as anyone who spends 5 minutes reading about what it's really like, you really are serving your country beyond the administration. I mean, you're really making personal sacrifices.
Yeah,
and
remember
job.
When we were sworn in as commissioned officers at the White House, that Andy Card said, remember, you do not work for the president of the United States. You work for the people of the country. And you should, every day when you walk in, you should say a little prayer of thanks, which I did. I thought that was the best advice. Mm-hmm. Just a prayer of gratitude to just remember and recenter yourself. But I wanted to be a journalist. You know, it's funny, actually, looking back, I love news. I love listening to stories. You'll see in the book, my dad starts me reading the newspapers when I'm in third grade. We watch every show. I want to get home from church early so I can watch the Sunday shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I started doing journalism, and I didn't love it. And it was shocking because I had just gotten a master's degree in it. I had a student loan then
right,
at that point.
Right, a lot of time and money invested.
And that means, because my parents said you're going to have to pay for your own graduate school, which I think is appropriate.
I do too.
And so I was, you know, then when you're a kid, like when you're 22 or whatever, you think your horizons are very small or narrow. But the reason I didn't like it is that it was my first taste of what I thought of as true media bias. And of course, I'm from Wyoming and Colorado, so you know, like, I just thought I was like mainstream in my views. Mm-hmm. And I think for most of the country, really.
I was going to say, compared to most of the country, you probably are.
Well, geographically, yes.
Yeah.
But that is not necessarily so true now on the coast and that right. and those highly populated cities. So I went back. I was waiting tables. Did you ever used to have to call the media line? Do you remember it was like a 1-800 number and you would call it and it would list all of the jobs in television broadcast?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? I think it was called Media Line.
Well, now when they have TVjobs.com and all these other places you can go online, but back in the day.
Yeah. So I used to call that every morning, 1-800, whatever, and I'd listen through. And there were jobs that were going for like $17,000 a year in like Tucson, Arizona, which I was like, okay, well, that's good because I speak Spanish. I could use that. And then I got an offer when I called to ask if I could use someone as a reference, someone down in Pueblo, Colorado that worked for Congressman Scott McInnes. He said, oh, wait, are you looking for a job? Why don't you come work for us? Mm-hmm. And I thought he meant in Pueblo, Colorado. And I thought, oh, I just went to college there. I want to go and do and be.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, I shouldn't go work in politics because then I'm not going to be able to work in television journalism. And then, you know, that's one of the things I write my book about is that your plan is never going to work out.
So crazy.
And now I'm 45 now. So I took this really circuitous route to get to actually what I wanted to do, which was to be able to comment based on experience, which I realized I never could have done had I not actually gone and worked in the government.
Right.
I worked on Capitol Hill. One of my pieces of advice is take the jobs no one else wants.
Mm-hmm.
I would take every assignment. I did environment and energy communications for the Bush White House for 2.5 years, which basically because they never had to worry about it, they knew that I would take care of it. That puts me in a position to say, like, well, she can get her stuff done, you know, that you can count on her. And that brings me into the upper press office at the White House.
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. I mean, I was a lawyer. I never knew I was going to end up
doing
this.
But you use those skills every day.
Yeah, I'm covering the Supreme Court now and covering legal stuff for Fox. Yeah, I could have never as easily have done that. Yeah, you can study and figure things out. But working, as you said, from real world experience is an important thing. All right, now I have to ask you a couple of important questions.
Okay.
Can I bring up the topic of baby showers?
Sure.
Because
I hate them.
I do too.
I don't go.
And I was so glad when we found each other because I was like, I feel guilty even saying that I hate baby showers. I will send you the best thing on your registry. Please do not make me go to your baby shower.
Yeah.
Is that bad?
No. I don't like to go either. And I don't think it's because you and I don't have children.
Mm-mm.
I like kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially when they're a little older.
I don't like the poop games and the diaper and all
no,
that stuff.
Like, and actually, it turns out that most people kind of don't.
Yeah.
I think part of it is that we work a lot of hours and baby showers take up like 7 hours of your Saturday or Sunday because you got to get the present, you got to go to the event, you got to drive home. And so one time I got caught in a little white lie situation.
Oh, no. I try to avoid those, but they happen.
And I had said that I needed to be with the president on Saturday, which I did.
Well, yeah, who can refute that?
Right. Like, oh, I had the best excuse for the longest time. But the truth was, we were done at noon. So I really could have gone. Then another friend kept asking me, what day would work for you for a baby shower? And I was like, oh, that one won't
never.
Work. That one won't. And finally I realized, oh, she's basically trying to find a date that works for me. I'm like, but wait, mm-hmm. it's your baby.
Right. I mean, I'll send you a nice gift and I will babysit.
I was in the green room and the president was giving his stump speech. Okay. And I've heard it a lot. Mm-hmm. This is in 2007.
You get it memorized at some point.
I know every single word, but I'm still listening out of the side of my ear. And I hear him say that when you have principles from which you do not waver, it is much easier to make decisions because mm-hmm. you're like, I don't do that. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, I need a principle mm-hmm. that I don't go to baby showers. Mm-hmm. And that means that it's not personal against them.
No.
I will always send a present.
Exactly.
But my principle is I don't go. So please don't invite me because mm-hmm. I don't want to have to say no.
Or you don't want to have to lie.
Now, I broke my principle.
Okay.
But for good reason. Okay. One of the producers that we work with here at mm-hmm. Fox and a good friend of mine, Megan Albano, had a baby and we went to the baby shower and it was really mm-hmm. fun. There were mm-hmm. no games.
Okay, good. I mean, if we're not going to do the diaper games and all that,
but it was lunch. It was nice.
Oh, I like a lunch.
And of course, you know, and our colleagues, Kimberly Guilfoyle and Ainsley Earhart, actually hosted the lunch. And I went there and I thought, you know what? Maybe I was missing something. Right. Because with my new hours of working so late,
I know, Lady of
Leisure, can go to lunch.
I know. We have, believe me, people, we have plans for the lunches. I can't talk about them here because they're going to be top secret.
Secret lunch.
But before you go, I'm going to ask you just some either or questions that you have to decide. This is our cross examination. All right, here we go. Would you, and this is a tough one, I think, would you rather be the funniest person in the room or the most intelligent?
Intelligent, 100%.
Really? But don't you like being funny, too?
No, intelligent people are funny.
You know what? You're right. You could tell that people are smart when they can make you laugh.
Yeah.
And they get it. Mm-hmm. I like that, too. But I would like to be a tie between funniest and most intelligent.
But you are.
Right. Yeah, yeah, so, exactly. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. Okay. Would you rather have free Wi-Fi wherever you go, which I kind of think is sort of how the world operates now, or free coffee whenever and wherever you want?
I don't drink coffee.
Me either.
I'll take the Wi-Fi.
We're basically cut from the same cloth.
The problem is with the public Wi-Fi, as my niece will tell me, she works cybersecurity for the House Commerce Committee. Mm-hmm. She's like, never use public Wi-Fi.
No, I agree. I think it's a horrible idea. And somebody was talking to me about it's so easy. You go to Starbucks or whatever. I'm like, no. China, Russia is watching.
Right.
So I just assume. And I assume the NSA reads all my emails, too. I mean, you just have to assume.
Did you see that thing that Google, now Gmail says they aren't going to read your emails to send your ads? I was like, you were doing that?
Okay. First of all, you know how Gmail now gives you the suggested responses?
I'm not on Gmail. I don't have a Gmail account.
Oh, okay. Well, that'll be another podcast. Anyway, be careful. Okay. Would you rather only be able to be blunt and speak the truth about what you're thinking at all times or never be able to speak again?
Blunt.
Yeah, because this
basically
like liar, liar.
Like, when I left the White House, I really think I lost my filter. And I have no problem not being... I mean, I try to be gracious and dignified. And I try also... I'm trying to listen more.
That's a good quality.
I know, but maybe not so great if you're on a show where you have to...
Blurt. Like, blurt out.
fight for a chance to say something.
But I can tell you speak the truth. You're a truth speaker.
I am. I have tried to be.
Okay. Would you rather be able to speak any language you want or be able to communicate with your pet?
Oh, pet. Definitely.
I feel like after
good with English.
Yeah, I mean, but other foreign languages or whatever. I feel like when my Moki was alive, and you're probably the same with Jasper, they do understand you. And understand them.
Like, okay, yesterday, Jasper's had like 3 baths in his life because they're the kind of dog that really doesn't need one. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, he went in the creek where he wasn't supposed to go. So I said, okay. So we're walking home. I said, you're going to have a shower. He's had 3 in his entire life.
He knows it, though.
He knew. And his head down, walking so slowly back to the house.
Oh, glum and sad.
Hiding in the corner of the shower.
No. See, this is what I don't get. Both of our dogs love water. You can't keep them out of it. But the minute you try to get them in a bath or a shower, it's like you're waterboarding.
And also rain. He will cower in the rain.
That is so ridiculous. But they love water.
I know.
I don't get it. Okay. Would you rather eat, if you have to eat a whole jar, Nutella or peanut butter?
Peanut butter.
Really?
Yeah, Nutella I like, but it's too sweet.
I love it. It's very delicious.
Have you ever tried eating an entire jar of Nutella?
I don't want to answer that question. I'm going to take the fifth on
the answer
that.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
No, here's the thing. I don't anymore.
Shell's traveling. Like,
there's been days that would happen. What I had to used to be really careful about was frosting. Like the icing that comes in a jar
like
or whatever.
Like Duncan Hines?
Yes, because like what's to stop you?
Which kind of
like,
chocolate or the vanilla?
I just, no, like maybe cream cheese.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're like, I'm just going to have one spoonful. 18 spoonfuls later, you're in a sugar coma and your stomach hurts. You're like, why did I do that? Okay, one last question. Would you rather stub your toe every single day on the way out the door or have to wear wet socks for the rest of your life?
Stub toe.
Yeah, but what if it's...
I hate wet socks.
Oh, aren't they gross?
What kind of question is that?
I'm just saying these are questions that are revealing deep, dark, pathological secrets about you. So anyway, thanks for joining Living the Bream.
I love this podcast. I'm a big podcast fan, and yours is one of the best.
Thank you. Yours, too. It is delightful. Please tell Jasper and Peter I said hello.
Will do. Thank you.
Bye.